Hello, friends. Before we get rolling with this episode, I just wanted to let you know I am doing a Christmas giveaway, which I am so excited for. I have a book from L. Russ, which is Paleo Thyroid Solution, and some goodies from Wild Foods, as well as Keto Brick, and I'm so excited to be giving those away. In order to be eligible, all you have to do is leave a written review, find me on Instagram at Connie Begani, and go ahead and follow me, and then put that review in your stories and tag me in it, and I will get you put down to win some good stuff. I'm so excited to give this away, you guys, so please hop on it. I'll be announcing the winner mid-January, so I'm looking forward to giving away some cool stuff. Hello there, and welcome to my podcast. I'm Connie. I'm a certified nutritionist, personal trainer, busy mom, and I live on a small hobby farm. I'm a former bodybuilder, and I currently have found a love for endurance sports. But I'm not your typical athlete. I believe there are many more contributors to athletic performance and overall health, and that we as a population might be doing it wrong. You won't see me pounding goose or chicken and rice, but you will see me in the pursuit to fuel not only athletic performance, but also balance it with optimal health. This is not just a podcast for athletes. Many people that fall into the health scene get there for a reason. I found myself in suboptimal states at multiple times in my life, and it has really sparked my passion for metabolic and systemic health. I am constantly a student of what I love, and now I hope to help others by bringing quality guests to the show to share their opinions and resources to hopefully help you formulate strategies to help you crack your health code. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode. Today, I'm very, very excited to be having Molly McLaughlin join me on the podcast today to talk about sleep, which is something I've wanted to have someone come on and talk about for quite some time. Unfortunately, I've been unable to connect with some of the people that I want to talk to about the subject, and so I was very fortunate when Molly got back with me and wanted to come on the show. Molly is the creator of Sleep is a Skill. It's a company that optimizes people's sleep through a unique blend of technology, accountability, and behavioral change. The company was born from her scratching her own itch after a lifetime of poor sleep habits. Knowing the difference between a life with sleep and without, she has now dedicated her life to sharing the forgotten skill set of sleep. You guys, this is a great podcast. We talk a lot about some really important things when it comes to sleep and developing our circadian rhythms and things that interrupt that. So I think grab a pen and paper. This is going to be a really great show. Before we dive into the show, make sure that you go and stop and leave a review. If you've listened to other podcasts that I have put out there, I really appreciate the feedback. It helps me in so many ways. Also helps me get wonderful guests on this podcast and helps it be more visible so others can start learning a little bit about how to start their own health journey or how to improve all sorts of things. So super, super important that you guys leave those reviews for me. It's like paying me. I don't like charge for this. I don't do any monetizations. I don't have advertisements on this podcast. I do it strictly to help others. So I put a lot of time into it and a lot of effort and energy, and I pour my heart and soul out for it. So if you could just take that moment and leave me a review, I cannot thank you enough. Also, if you haven't been on my podcast before, I did recently start a Facebook group for ketogenic athletes. The name of that group is Ketogenic Athletes. It's hopefully a place that will grow and develop and thrive into a place where many people that are pursuing athletic goals as a ketogenic athlete can hop on and bounce things off of each other and learn all sorts of things and tell their story. You do not have to be an athlete to join this group. If you're interested in performance in any way, please join. I have no problems. This is going to be a great learning forum, hopefully, for everybody. If you know friends that might be interested, feel free to show them as well. I mean, I would love to have you. So great group going down there. And don't forget, I put a lot of wonderful information out on Instagram. You can stop over there at Connie Begani, C-O-N-N-I-E BEGONNIE. It's a great little place. Give me a follow. I would love to get feedback on the shows from you guys. So anyway, without further ado, let's get this talk going with Molly McLaughlin. Welcome to the show, Molly. I'm so excited because I have wanted to get somebody on the show for a while to talk about sleep. That's what you're all about. And so welcome, welcome. I'm excited for this conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I always love conversations about sleep. So I'm, you know, so happy to be here and grateful that you're game to discuss such an important topic.
Yeah. And that's the thing is people don't realize how much sleep influences everything. And I knew for a long time how important it was. However, when I really started nerding out on it, all of a sudden, and taking my own biofeedback, all of a sudden I realized how much more it influences than I actually even thought. We're talking blood sugar, recovery, all of these things, and stress, you name it. And so today I'm hoping you can kind of give us a little insight on all of that stuff. But before we get going too far, how about you tell my listeners a little bit about your background and what got you interested in sleep?
Sure. Yeah. So great points on the sleep conversation. And what got me into it was that I was really just trying to solve my own problem because I thought of myself as all kinds of labels around my sleep, a bad sleeper, a night owl, a short sleeper, for a while that I thought I had sleep anxiety. I mean, it was all kinds of things around that my sleep, you know, stunk. But that was later on when for most of my life, it looked like was I was going to bed late, much later than, you know, some of my friends. It was when I was younger, you'd have those sleepovers and I'd be the person falling asleep much later, sleep in later. And that was sort of just how it was for me. I didn't think too much of it. I thought it was just how it was. My habits got more intense with that, especially as an entrepreneur in Manhattan, you know, very much burning the candle at both ends, and then would use the reasoning of, well, I get some of my best work done at night, so I'm going to, you know, work at night, you know, doesn't matter, I can make up my own hours, so I'll just sleep in. And so it went like that for a period of time, and then I didn't begin to connect as I would get sick more often, anxiety levels were going up, you know, just a number of things that really weren't working so great in my health and well-being. I wasn't making the connection between my sleep, and it was not until I went through my own period of really just challenging insomnia. And you know, I can put it lightly now, but during the time when I was going through it, it felt like a rock bottom period in my life. Because really, of course, you know, when we're going through those things with insomnia, it's related to sleep. It's often not happening, you know, out of a vacuum. It's not just sort of like all of a sudden, you know, your sleep is not working. There's so many things that were not working and how I was managing my life and my stress and my anxiety and all those things. And then suddenly what came about was, it was around like 3 to 4 months of really intense insomnia, and then a period of time to really begin to heal that problem. But that was all while we're traveling, my boyfriend and I traveling internationally on the road. So we're in multiple different locations and totally foreign environment. And some of the crutches that I used to be utilizing to get by with my kind of, you know, poor sleep habits were no longer available because we're in totally different environments. I couldn't go and get my over-the-counter, like, you know, Tylenol PM or some of this, just the things that we would not recommend anyone really kind of rely on. I had relied on, and even from both the effects of those, but even the psychological kind of crutch that those brought. So once those were gone, then went through that period of insomnia. But on the plus side, I am a pretty obsessive personality. I'm sure you'll be able to tell that in this conversation that we'll be having around sleep. So partly probably why I got into that problem with my sleep in general, but the plus side was that I really went down the rabbit hole understanding how then I can heal my sleep by not, because I was some of the scariest parts was that when it was at its worst, I was in Croatia and I went to the doctors there and left with their version of Ambien. And in that moment, it was kind of like, what, am I going to be taking something to every single night for how long is this the plan? What are we doing here? And so that was a really kind of, you know, eye-opening moment that I was going to need to kind of figure out for myself what to do unless I wanted just to go down this kind of default path of now taking something so dramatic as a hypnotic, you know, or any of these sedatives and all these things. So the plus side was then being able to find a natural approach and not have to then be reliant on these drugs that we find a lot of problems with long-term use of them. So on the other side of it, what got built was then sleep is a skill. And, you know, now we have online courses and newsletters and podcasts and just this whole community and world around what we can do really from a behavioral perspective to shift our sleep. And the cool thing was that so much of what there is available to change, to improve the level and quality of our sleep, I had no clue that I was doing so many of these behaviors that were impacting my results. So, and we'll get into some of those certainly today.
Awesome. So this is great because I find that the best professionals in these things are people that have experienced it for themselves. I know the reason I dove into nutrition so crazy was because it was a huge game changer for myself. And I wanted to be able to share that with others. So this is going to be a great topic, I'm sure.
Yay. Well, I completely agree. Because often, you know, when people are so immersed or, you know, enmeshed in a particular topic, there's a reason for that. And certainly in my case, and it sounds like in your case too. And so that passion for that is very much alive and well. And then for me, being able to see now on the ground, these clients being able to make such, you know, really measurable changes in their sleep and their results, and the ripple effect that it has in all areas of their life can really just be remarkable.
So let's get started then with this. Where did you start to remedy these problems that you were having? When did you realize that what you were doing didn't work? And where did your journey start as far as fixing your sleep and what was impacting it?
So there's almost on my website, on the about page, I have kind of a tongue in cheek, like long laundry list of so many other things that I had tried that didn't work. You know, so it was like, and this is part of, what I see for people too, when they're getting into this, poor cycle with their sleep, then we often are looking, or certainly that was my problem, I was looking for the quick fix or the thing that was going to, and often all these things being external from myself, what would make a difference. So on the list would be like hypnosis, you know, breath work, yoga, intense workouts, light workouts, you know, just like it goes on, supplements, all the things, right? And it wasn't until I started really understanding more around chronobiology, which is really the science of time and how much our body really yearns to have a countable rhythm and schedule. And certainly as it relates to our circadian rhythm, that 24-hour rhythm that as human beings, we are really very much tied to, as much as I would try to shirk that. Certainly living in Manhattan and you could have 24-hour lifestyle. I thought that I didn't need to be connected to that, and not realizing that there's so much power and just kind of countableness that can happen if we bring back a schedule that, if we looked back at our hunter-gatherer kind of ancestors, had just been so innately connected to as being more connected to the rhythms of nature, being more outdoor oriented, the rising and setting the sun, which for me during the period when I wasn't sleeping sounded so like, ugh, who cares? Sun, please. Like, give me the supplements, the things, the drugs, the whatever that are going to help me sleep, because I was so desperate for sleep. But it turns out that there really is kind of a bit more of a long-term game that we can create. But once we create that countable kind of system, then it can really help improve that. So to zoom out, the framework that I have clients operate within is called circadian rhythm entrainment. And that was really what I had to entrain myself on. And that entrainment is just relates to the fact that I didn't know this, that our circadian rhythm really exists on a spectrum. So it can either, you can either fall on a weak side of the, your circadian rhythm or a strong circadian rhythm. And, you know, you could easily make the argument that many of us in the Western society are more closely related to a weak, having a weak circadian rhythm than a stronger one, like our hunter-gatherer ancestors. So there's a lot of things that we can actually do to entrain the strength of that circadian rhythm. So from that perspective, then one of the most important things is actually light and our relationship to light. So that was one of the first things that I had to start kind of creating a schedule and a system around. And what was really empowering around that was that when my sleep was not working, part of what I was focusing so much on was the nights. And I would just, I'd have this whole thing and I would, I'd had like, you know, the eye mask, the earplugs, the, you know, put the temperature at a particular thing, and I'd have my books and my stuff. And it was just like, I was going into battle. And then like, okay, so like sleep. And then it just wouldn't come. And I would get so frustrated. And I really felt like I was like losing my mind. And what was really helpful with circadian rhythm entrainment is more, you're really shifting your attention. It's not like you're forgetting the nights, but you're certainly shifting your attention much more to the days. And how you begin your day is a big part of it. So even if you get nothing out of what I'm saying on this conversation, then I'd love it for the one thing to be that when we start our day, how we start our day really impacts the quality of our sleep. And one of the first most important things is getting morning sunlight and being exposed to that each day, and not even just from behind a window or, you know, with sunglasses on or any of that. Like, you actually have to physically get outside, expose your eyes to sunlight, including your skin, which has photoreceptors present in it to, that is getting a sense of what time really is it. And the time, and that's what, you know, chronobiology really looks at, is based on the time that the body perceives it to be in, then it will release certain hormones at those particular times. It prepares the body for, the organs are doing certain things at different times of the day. I mean, it's really a fascinating concept. But the eyes really connect to the master clock. So there's all these little clocks throughout our body and all that little parts of those cells. And virtually every cell that we have has its own little clock. But the master clock is in our brain, and it's the called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And that is connected directly to our eyes. So that's why that light is such a big element to that. And I would also make the argument that that's why, or one of the factors that so many of us are having such trouble with our sleep now, you know, Google searches for like sleep tips and all this stuff are like through the roof. And it's like the why is that? And it's multifaceted, obviously, but the light is a big component. We've really only been exposed to this option to have augmented days since Edison, which in a Darwinian perspective has not been that long for us to adapt to that. And then in alignment with that, we're increasingly spending more and more time inside, so totally devoid of those cues that we would have gotten from sunrise and sunset previously. Like in 2016, the World Health Organization basically put out this finding that they were asserting that over 90% or for the average person in the West, that they're spending over 90% of their days inside. And that was in 2016, no pandemic, all that stuff. So it's likely much, much more. And so the problem with that is that two really important parts of circadian rhythm entrainment is one, the light, two, temperature. So temperature is underneath the rung, so light being most important, and then temperature being right below it. And if you think back to how we used to live, this was all just automatic. We didn't have to think about it one bit because we would have been outside in those elements. So the sun would rise. And then of course, when the sun rises in your environment, in your space, then the temperature goes up. So then those two cues would then signal to the body, okay, so we're no more melatonin for us. It's time to take on this day. Natural cortisol needs to be released, and cortisol gets like such a bad rap, but it's actually really important for this rhythm of our proper sleep. And so then you would have that every morning, and then you would only have a certain period of time, almost like, you know, the Amish or something, where you would have a certain amount of time to get your work done, best productivity hack going. And then the sun would set, and then it was really very much a whole I often say with clients, like day mode and night mode, and you would move into night mode. And so with, you know, the sun down, it's colder. And so that's another signal to the body, like, okay, so we're going to start, you know, the cortisol is kind of has shifted down, and then we can shift over into melatonin. And because melatonin is really known as a hormone of darkness, which a lot of people aren't connected to, that if you are looking to up your melatonin production, you need to get friendly with darkness. And many of us don't, you know, we're always having glows of something, you know, there's the phone, the laptop, the TV, the little, you know, glowing things on our alarm clock or whatever. So getting really connected to that darkness, because then that can help ensure that we're producing enough of that melatonin that will make it much easier to fall asleep. And then also for the people that have difficulty staying asleep, then that can really be helpful there too. So that kind of speaks to those two really important ones, is the light and temperature. But then also within circadian rhythm entrainment, part of the, there's a bunch of things that can impact, particularly that temperature cue. And some of those can get really interesting when people start looking at it from a behavioral perspective. For instance, the timing of our food and the types of foods that we're having can really warm up our body or cool it down. So getting connected to that, and that can impact certain things like wake-ups. So, and of course, exercise timing will shift our bodily temperature. Thought timing is a really compelling one, that our thoughts can actually heat up our body. And there's measurements around some of our brain matter in going up in temperature if we're having difficulties with sleep. So there's a lot there that you know, you can really look at to make a difference with all of those indicators to strengthen that circadian rhythm.
So awesome. You just got me into a huge thought process there. Especially with myself, I noticed. So I recently started doing some endurance cycling, and I've been waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning for I don't know how long. And I find in the summer, my sleep is much better. I wake up at 4 a.m. and I get on the bike immediately in the morning. And I find that the sun is either up or coming up when I am riding. Now it's fall and I don't have that. I'm not outside first thing in the morning, and my sleep had declined severely. And so the other thing you talked about was exercise and then also food. I'm interested, being a nutritionist and being really heavily into food, what your thoughts are on that as revolving around the circadian rhythm.
Yeah, great call outs. And I so sympathize with you about the changing in the seasons and the challenges that we can have based on whatever schedules we've got going on. And then the changing of don't even get me started on the daylight savings time thing. You know, as far as changing the clocks around different states that you're in or doing different things, it's just, so I hear you. And the fact that you notice that is a big deal too, because a lot of people are kind of just not taking in some of those factors and understanding, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, I don't feel as good. I'm more cranky, all of these things, and then not getting at the root cause that can be such a big challenge. So I hear you with that. And then on the topic of things like the food, so absolutely, that can be such a huge game changer, especially now. I think one of the things that helps, as much as I'm talking all this, you know, about technology being a problem for our sleep and all this stuff, at the same time, I think it can actually, it's gotten a lot of people in the game again around their sleep, I think, by having some of these different sleep trackers, but also for food. So the rise in popularity around things like continuous glucose monitors, I think, is really exciting. So it's getting, even if people did, you know, 14 days or a month, and just to get an idea of what happens when we have those swings and crashes, can be really, really helpful. I've had many of my clients will at least do, you know, kind of a small period of time getting those. And then some of them get so addicted to them, not addicted, but, you know, they get into like the fun of shifting around their diet and their timing, that some of them have even gotten prescriptions from their doctors so that they can keep that kind of going at a more affordable rate. So depending on, you know, what your approach is to it, either way, doing it for a short period of time can be really helpful. So part of that is that it's pretty fascinating that glucose really exists on our circadian rhythm itself as well. So the timing of our glucose and the timing of our types of foods can be really, really eye-opening. I was able to do a nice a kind of cool look at working with Levels Health, who has continuous glucose monitors, really solid company. So there, you know, it allows, you know, not a promo or anything, just but to say, like, it allows for, you know, you to not have to deal with getting the prescription from your doctor. And so you can just order it right online. But having said that, we did a nice look at, we just had people that had Oura Rings and then using the Levels Health continuous glucose monitor from Libre, and we had a dashboard, so we were able to kind of chart and see what was going on with their blood sugar, and then how that correlated with wake-ups and difficulty falling asleep. So one really important thing for people, if they, particularly with wake-ups, is that if you're finding that you're continually waking up at certain times and, you know, it's really a frustrating thing, one of the first things that we tend to look at is your blood sugar stability. So with things like the continuous glucose monitors, what can be really cool, and I really fully anticipate that in the future, with, and I know that things like Levels has plans of being able to link up things like Oura Ring and all this different stuff and Whoop Band and all that with your Levels Health. But what's cool is then you can see when there's some of those dramatic changes in your blood sugar, so a big crash, then we can start to overlay of, was there a corresponding wake up in alignment with that, you know, crash. And what's really cool about, as we get more and more data, because previously, and it's still, it can be really challenging to find blood sugar data for people that aren't either diabetic or pre-diabetic, because that's where such a large mass of the studies and stuff have been. But now with so many people kind of getting into this conversation, then we'll be able to get a lot more data. But as of right now, it seems to be that one of the results of when we do have that crash in blood sugar throughout the night is then a corresponding release of adrenaline and cortisol. And then of course, if you're having, if that's circulating throughout your body while you're sleeping, which are not, those don't go with sleep very well. So then we tend to wake up. And then not only do we tend to wake up, but those can be the type of wake ups where you're like, I am up. Like, you know, I am not falling back asleep anytime soon. And that can be really, really frustrating for people. So getting at the root of that blood sugar, you know, instability is of course what we're going to want to look to. But one of the ways, even if you're like, okay, I'm not going to get a continuous blood sugar monitor right now, so fine. So then we can instead, or one of the things in alignment with that is that before bed, we can test out some of the things that can help stabilize our blood sugar throughout the course of the night. And then start, because big part of this, which I think is really fun around, I'm very nerdy, one of the things I think is very fun around the sleep optimization element of things is that we're doing a lot of kind of trial and error experimentations to see, is this part of the big source problem for you? And so for many people, what they'll do is, you know, you can have, say, like a spoonful of almond butter before bed, you can have MCT oil in your tea before bed. Some people do sweet potatoes, all these different things that you can, you know, collagen, protein, stuff like that. Things that are known to kind of help stabilize a bit of our blood sugar and warn, stave off that big crash. So in doing that, then if you notice, then you're having less of those wake-ups by bringing that in, then that can help be a sign that that's part of the conversation or the puzzle for you. And then we want to go to work, and we still always really want to go to work on balancing blood sugar anyway, but that gives them more of a sense of urgency to do that if you want to have a solid good night of sleep. And then it's the problem, or not problem, one of the things to remember is that it's very much an interconnected, almost a snowball effect, because when you don't get that good night of sleep, then even just for a couple nights of sleep deprivation, then we know that the glucose levels go up. And so then you're already sort of hitting the ground running and, you know, idling at a higher glucose state. So even that one type of food that you might have that maybe wouldn't normally spike you quite so much is going to spike you so much more. So it really behooves us to figure out this sleep conversation, because then it just makes things easier. Then the next thing I'll say too is then, even again, if you don't get a monitor, one of the things that we'll have people really aim to bring about in their lives is something called circadian rhythm intermittent fasting. And that is really where we're eating between sunrise and sunset. And I know that can be, of course, challenging in the winter periods, because people are like, oh, what am I supposed to stop eating at like 4:30? And so we're trying to look at, see, you can gamify this. There's an app called Zero where you can actually kind of geotags where you are, and then you'll see how late are you eating outside of sunrise and sunset, and start to notice patterns. There might be, oh, interesting, I always on Thursdays and Fridays eat like so much later or whatever. So you could start to kind of adjust your behaviors, but looking to have it as coupled as closely as possible to sunrise and sunset. And see how that can help affect you, because with that rise and fall of glucose, you can often see that you have whatever, a piece of cake at 8 a.m., which is a really funny time to have a cake, but that the ability for many people to handle that piece of cake at 8 a.m. versus 8 p.m. tends to be pretty clear for people. So what you want to then try to play with is how can we move back the timing a bit of our food timing. So some of the suggestions, like from Levels and NutriSense, which are two big players in that game of getting people continuous glucose monitors without a prescription, is to stop eating at around, and this is very broad stroke conversation, but around 5 or 6 on a kind of average timeline of obviously, if you have a different type of shift work or what have you, you're looking at that. But that also plays in something called early time restricted feeding. And that's a bit more aggressive. That's kind of more what I do, which is ending a bit earlier. So it's even like 3 or 4 ending your meal timing, and then tending to fast a little bit throughout there, and then eating first thing in the morning. So you're kind of shifting. It's kind of the opposite of what has trended for a while with intermittent fasting. So for so long, it's like just skip breakfast, which is certainly what I used to do for a long time. But then the problem for me and many of my clients has been, then they would find that they were kind of backloading so much of their caloric intake into late at night. And so, you know, so we're just kind of shuffling the timing and seeing what that does for sleep quality. If you're measuring with your sleep trackers, then what many people find is when they move back that meal timing, what tends to result for them is a drop in their heart rate while sleeping, which is really crucial for then waking up feeling rested, an improvement in their HRV while they're sleeping, a drop in body temperature, and a drop in respiratory rate. So all of those can really help be big factors to how you're going to feel when you wake up the next morning.
So there's so many things that I love that you just said there. First of all, it's funny that you are with Levels and that you have used their product and things, because I myself have done the same thing. I kind of befriended Josh back in the beginning stages of their building their program, and they have an excellent program going on and very smart people working on it. Him and Dr. Means both are wonderful. Yeah. And I highly, highly, highly recommend everybody at least try it, like you said, even if it's a 2-week trial or a 4-week trial, whatever it may be, you will get unsurmountable information and feedback from that. I know, I'm not sure if you have a code. I have a code where people can skip the waiting line, which is like 48,000 people to get on there. I can throw that in the show notes. But yeah, great. Continuous glucose monitoring is amazing. You learn so much from it. And I know with myself, as far as the intermittent fasting goes, I obviously don't stick to it constantly, because I believe that variability is a good thing in our human diet, in our sleep patterns and all these things, because that's how the seasons are. Yes. And so I'm a ketogenic athlete. I've been ketogenic for about 18 months now. I do really, really well with it. And that's not to say I'm a carbophobe at all. I'll do targeted keto. I'll do cyclical keto, because I believe variability is key. But around that, I have learned what affects my sleep and such. And along the fasting area there, I like to do a 16-8. And I try to have my big meal be that like lunchtime. I start later in the day. So my lunch is huge. And then my dinner, I try to have 2 hours at least before bed. And it's a little bit smaller. So my large meal is like, people will see my posts on Instagram and they're like, whoa, you can get away with eating that giant, like sandwich, whatever thing it is I make, you know? And I'm like, yeah, because it's not about eating like 6 little tiny meals a day. I like to eat a big giant one. My blood sugar responds well to that. And then go to, you know, have a smaller one in the afternoon. So 8-16 works really well for me. Another thing that I wanted to ask you in the nutrition realm, and I don't know if you've stumbled across this, but I've noticed that when I pull in exogenous ketones before I go to bed, I get better rest than I ever do, which is really quite odd because I'm in ketosis 99% of the time. And you would think that that would make my sleep better, or you hear some people that actually suffer when they move into ketosis. But for some reason, when I pull in that extra amount, my sleep is way better. I wake up and my HRV is way better. And so I'm wondering if you have any feedback on that or if this is anything that you've experienced before.
Yeah, great question. And I love your experimentation and then the tracking to see the results for you. Yes. And I would say I have seen that with some clients that have been able to utilize that and to make a difference with their, because that has been one concern. And it's this weird interaction where people will love the experience of being in ketosis, the energy that they have throughout the day, they just feel amazing. And then the challenge of, okay, but my sleep is, it's a challenge. What I've seen a bit more is, I would say, the tendency to then add in a bit of that carb cycling, and then just how that, especially for women, seems to make a difference, depending, of course, on the age, but particularly for women of menstruating age, tending to help support some of the changes in hormones that we're going through at different parts. I've also seen on the women conversation, particularly adding that in the second half of our cycle. So looking at the luteal phase and how that can be a particularly challenging time. So whenever we're speaking about this as it relates to women, it can be really helpful to see what part of your cycle you're in, because then that can be impacting some of the results. And that's actually, unfortunately, why we aren't as represented in a lot of studies, because we have just so many more factors, which is actually pretty fascinating because, you know, I spoke to the circadian rhythm and how we are diurnal creatures, meaning that we're meant to be awake during the day and at sleep at night. And that's really the main rhythm that as human beings we're operating on. And so for men, they're just sort of being concerned about that rhythm. But for women, we also have our infradian rhythm, meaning that we have around a 28-day cycle that we're having to be mindful of for our sleep results. And so the more and more we can get people to kind of, Aliza Vitti has been a great speaker on cycle syncing and noticing where we're falling in our cycle so that we can kind of pre-plan. So say if, you know, the ketones are working for you, we might want to plan on utilizing things like that, particularly in the second half of our cycle, because that's when we often can encounter one lower HRV in general. So there are definitely studies around looking at HRV levels for women at different parts of their cycle, just a trend towards having it higher in the first half of the cycle and lower in the second half of the cycle. And so kind of bringing out all your tools in that part of the month. And for some, it might be bringing in cycling a bit more of those carbs too. So finding your sweet spot with that. But yes, the ketosis element of things definitely can take some testing and trial and error for each person to find what works. Because we want to find that sweet spot of being able to have the all the wonderful effects of ketosis and the energy, but then really ensuring that's not running us down with our sleep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's a place where people kind of get stuck. They think they have to be in ketosis all the time. I don't think it's a permanent thing. And I think cycling it is, I mean, obviously it takes some time to become efficient in ketosis. So you need to spend a little more time than you would once we are efficient in that area. You're able to come in and out of it so much easier because your body understands how to make that shift in gears. And it's been really beneficial to my own health journey as far as that goes. But I think that people get stuck on thinking they need to remain in ketosis all the time, which is actually pretty easy for me. I mean, we're all different, but I know me, I can slam a ginormous carb load and still stay in ketosis. It doesn't even knock me out. And I think it's because my body is efficiently utilizing both fuel sources. So it doesn't need to go one way or the other.
Absolutely. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And just that awareness that you're having of your body and the testing and knowing you know, kind of what works for you and what doesn't. That's one of the reasons, you know, not to belabor the continuous glucose monitor, but I think it can be helpful because there is that bio-individuality perspective that for some people, you know, certain foods are going to really flare them up. And for other people, it's, those aren't as big of a problem as other things might be. So getting a sense of your where you're at is really important in this conversation, general health and well-being, but then of course, as it relates to our sleep.
Absolutely. So let's shift gears here a little bit and talk about some of the things that are affecting our sleep. I know things that are being brought to the surface more and more frequently is our screen time. I know many of us think that we need to be like looking at our phone and reading through things in order to relax and get ready for bed. This is our time, right? When in fact, there's a lot of things now supporting that that is a no-no.
Yes. Yeah. Really great point. So what we're trying to do in the evening is lower sort of our brain, you know, the Hertz production throughout the brain. So throughout the day, we're looking like a kind of hearkened on that day mode and night mode. In the day mode, we really want to be in this state of, you know, one, we want our body temperature to be higher because it's kind of the natural arc of a healthy person is having higher body temperature throughout the day. We want more activity. You know, we're solving problems. We're having those challenging conversations. We're moving things forward that might stress us out and kind of keep us ruminating in the middle of the night. We're doing all that and handling that during the day so that when we get to the nighttime and the sun goes down and it goes into kind of that night mode, that we're really shifting into more of kind of fasting states, lowering our body temperature, lowering our heart rate. And a lot of these really, if we get a count onable system really 7 days a week, which is, I think, part of the problem that certainly before the pandemic, even more of a problem because, you know, we'd have something called just social jet lag for many of us where we're pretty good during the course of the week and then the weekends or what have you, then we go all off course and then we're dealing with almost our self-created jet lag. If we really take on this area of sleep, we get committed, we're starting to maintain 7 days a week where we're consistent bedtime and consistent wake time across the board, then a lot of this starts to get handled in that from a physiological perspective, you don't have to like fight it as much. You just kind of naturally happen. So if you're monitoring any of your metrics, you start to see, oh, interesting, like the sun's going down and now my heart rate's starting to kind of come down a little bit and I'm just kind of chilling out. But in alignment with that, certainly then you have to be responsible for what we call thought timing as it relates to the circadian rhythm element of things is, do you just have some habits that haven't really been explored or blind spots where you tend to do certain things in the evening that aren't really conducive to that continued night mode, that lowering of kind of the Hertz production in our brain or the output there. So some of those things are for sure, like, you know, people, especially right now, you can go on your phone 2 seconds and be looking at whatever COVID numbers and the you know, politics and all the things. And a lot of these things can flare things up. You can see your heart rate kind of go up if you're measuring. You can notice your HRV then tanking, or you can kind of go into compare despair if you're going onto Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And so one of this starts to be some self-awareness of, are the things that I'm looking at serving me during this point in the day? And then starting to kind of create some boundaries for yourself of like what fits into that thought timing. Is this going to kind of activate me or is this going to be like a calming thing? And I will have certain clients that are really good or get really good at this and are able to really all that they're interacting with in the evening is kind of content that's fun. It's like, you know, comedy, it's light, it's easy breezy, and we'll ensure that the light isn't being counterproductive. So we'll, you know, make sure they're having red lights on their phone. So if you have an iPhone, you can literally just like Google, there's a trick in there to change the color filters to red. So you can kind of triple click on the phone and then suddenly it goes all red. Or if you have an Android, Twilight is one that you can use so that your phone is all red at night. Don't just rely on like the night mode settings or what have you that they will kind of have on there. It's a nice step in the right direction, but still has certainly a lot of blue light. also wearing blue blockers at night, but not the clear ones, the ones that have either orange or red tint. I know they look pretty dorky, but you know, just making that to be a habit in your evenings. And so then, so that the light component isn't being an excitatory, you know, kind of dopamine hit to your psychology and physiology. So being mindful of all those. And then for some people, if they have that commitment and they're ready to bring the discipline, we'll do things like a digital sunset. So the sun setting, and then they kind of put away the phones, the laptops, all that, and really kind of downshift. And if that's something that you can commit to, great. And for the people that I've found that aren't ready to commit to that, then certainly being mindful of the types of content that we're ingesting and that mitigating the blue light effects.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know with the new iPhone, iOS 14, I think it was, they actually have parameters set so your screen time can be set automatically. Yes. And so, like, I know my own personal phone shuts off at 6 o'clock every night. I can't do anything except for, like, look at the clock. And then I do, unfortunately, with my clients, I have it so that they can message me only them. So within the app that I have for them, then they can get in touch with me, but it's not my standard text messages. So I'm not getting any of those from anybody. So yeah. I have a paranoia revolving around somebody needing to get in touch with me and they can't. And so that's one place where I need to improve and set my work down a little bit.
Don't we all? Yeah. I hear you. So forever quest.
You did bring up Hertz and where our body runs at that. And that's our bodies all run at this electromagnetic frequency, believe it or not. And a lot of the things that we are being exposed to, especially Wi-Fi, 5G, cell phones, all these things actually run at a much higher frequency than what our body is used to. And so that's become another thing in conversation of sleep is shutting off Wi-Fi at night, shutting off your phone, turning it to airplane mode, things that help you get a better restful sleep. I know for you, you're in a large city area. It's probably a lot harder to remove those stressors from your system. What do you have as far as feedback about that?
Yeah. So very interesting point. So geography can be a big factor in your sleep, in your sleep results for sure. And that ability to kind of mitigate, you know, definitely a controversial topic, but the EMF output. So some people are like, it does nothing. And then other people are like, one, why risk it? Two, there's an argument that it does a lot. So wherever you fall in the camp, absolutely that one, you can, there's a measurable difference based on where you are. And so for my boyfriend and I, we've been kind of digital nomads for the last like 3.5, going on 4 years now. Of course, COVID has sort of shifted some things. So we had been particularly traveling to parts on the equator, which get a lot more sunlight, and getting to see the difference that can make for our sleep. And then, you know, being on the water and the ocean and all that fun stuff. Which certainly can act as like a Faraday cage if you're going into some of those environments with the water itself and grounding and all that. Again, more controversial topics, but it's incredible because then if you are tracking your sleep, you can see these different environments and what they're doing for your quality. But there are, if you're in the United States, there's certain websites, there's, I think it's like antenna search or something, where you can look and see how many antennas and different, you know, kind of EMF outputs there might be in your area. And no matter where you fall, there might still be like the knowingness that, okay, it is measurable that we don't want to, for say fertility reasons, it is a kind of known thing, you don't want to put laptop right over, you know, your reproductive organs. You don't want to stand right in front of a microwave. So it could make a lot of sense to mitigate the amount of EMFs that are in your sleep environment because it's meant to be a time of rest and relaxation and restorative properties. So why kind of add any sort of added elements? So that is part of one of the thing. We have a free like downloadable PDF on our website that you can get that walks you through some of the things that you can do for an optimized bedroom. And with that, one of the elements is, you know, kind of just kind of doing an audit around your environment of any, you know, Wi-Fi boxes, of course, turning those off in the evening or removing them from the space if possible. Any sort of plugs that you might have in the environment unnecessarily, then just sort of unplugging them. You can also do that in hotels. If you kind of just go around and sort of unplug some of those items. Then there's, you can hire people like building biologists that will come through and then they'll give you like a whole rundown of your particular space. So some people might find that they have smart meters or what have you on the other side of their bed. And then, you know, the kind of the difference that that might be making on their sleep. So all of those things are to be mindful of, but as much as also from a psychological perspective, how can we really remove a lot of the unnecessary activating items, whether both, you know, from a habits perspective or from a measurable perspective. So, you know, just ensuring you're not really bringing your phone into bed and establishing an outside place for that. And, you know, some of these things that we know, but then just if we look at it from another framework around any added electromagnetic frequency conversation, then that can also be like another reason for people to remove that. Sometimes you can also bring in, there's like, you know, $100 EMF meters that you can test just to get a sense of your space. And sometimes that can help underscore it for people when they start to see that it is a measurable thing. So those are some things that you can do.
Awesome. I love that. And, you know, I've found that with my own sleep that it's starting to improve the more and more I shut that off. So it's been a good little step for me. I think anytime we can kind of remove some of these external stressors, it may not be a big thing. We don't have to shut it off all day, but just removing it, I mean, we're sleeping, we don't need it anyway, right. Can be just a little extra help towards, you know, getting back to how things used to be, where we used to like sleep on the ground, where you actually get, when you're sleeping on the ground, you're actually getting electromagnetic energy fields from that, like at a certain rate. There's so many things. And so I feel like the more we can remove, the more we can help ourselves just kind of get back to how things used to be.
Yes, I completely agree. 100%. So even though a lot of this is like, you know, you're getting meters and you're getting tech and you're da da da, really in the simplest of form, we're looking to mimic and have a blueprint of how we used to do things for so many years. It just takes a little bit of forethought on the front end in, you know, 2020 and beyond. But, you know, once you get it kind of handled, it becomes really second nature. And it's just more back to basics in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. I love that. So in this journey towards seeking out optimal sleep, what are some other tools people can put in their toolkit?
Yeah. So I usually have people start with a sleep tracker if they don't already have one. So, you know, the Oura Ring right now in 2020 is one of the first ones that we'll recommend. And some people use, say, like the Whoop Band, BioStrap, Dream Headbands, all kinds of things that you can bring in. But either way, just tracking so we have some numbers, what gets measured gets managed. And then you can also bring in just a basic solid pair of blue blockers that's gonna, you know, have the red or orange tint to them and make that a part of your evening ritual. Really investing in your light environment. That PDF can help with some of the things that, you know, tips and tricks around, you know, ensuring, because really you're looking to have it be as dark as possible. So the basic thing is like candles, really. But if you're not willing to do that, then the red lights and incandescent lights and that sort of thing. And then after that can be also temperature. So I get a lot of clients even doing something like a chili pad or things that can help cool the sleep environment. Because we really, again, with that hearkening back, we weren't meant to really sleep on like foam and insulated and, you know, really trapping heat all around us. It would have been much colder sleeping on the ground. So mimicking that, and you often can see measurable changes in your sleep with something like that. And then there's a bunch of other things that you can do. You can bring in the continuous glucose monitors. You can bring in Leaf is one of my favorites for, it's almost a continuous glucose monitor, but for your HRV. So it like looks like this, and then you put it on your right over your heart. So I'll be doing that right after this. Wow. And so it will buzz you if your HRV starts dipping, you know, throughout the day. So you shift to your breathing immediately when that's happening. So you start to notice what's stressing you out. Oh my God, my calendar, my email is like a really danger zone for me. So things of that nature.
Oh no, mine would be buzzing all the time too. Oh, oh no.
Totally. Oh my goodness. It's really eye-opening. And the certain calls that I'll have to be making or what have you, then buzz, buzz, buzz. But it really starts to train you that you can restore balance to your body and bring you back to a parasympathetic state really pretty easily. It's just that we're notoriously bad at knowing when we're going into that state. So that's going to kind of help train you. But so there's a lot that can be done. But just some of those basic ones, getting outside, getting that sunlight, getting, you know, your environment really nice and dark and cool in the evenings, but particularly as you're leading up to the evening, not just when you go to bed, like hours and hours before. So those are some of the things.
Awesome. Well, if my listeners want to find you, how do they go about doing that? I know you have a lot of resources and information that could be beneficial to them. Where do they find you? What's the best place to get that information?
Yeah. So sleepisaskill.com acts as a great kind of bucket for all the things. So we've got a weekly newsletter. So every Monday that comes out on all the things, you know, it's called Molly's Monday Obsession. So all the things I'm obsessing about around sleep. And then we have the podcast. So we have a weekly episode each week on, you know, top sleep experts and all kinds of information there. We also have that downloadable PDF, so you can get that for free. And then if you want to, you know, find out more and go deeper, and, you know, we have online courses, we have small groups, and we have one-on-ones, and you can do a sleep assessment on there too to get, you know, real life feedback on your particular sleep.
I love that. I will put all that information in the show notes that people can just go click on it and find it. Awesome. And I certainly appreciate you spending time with me today. And hopefully maybe someday in the future, we'll do a round two of this and yes, find out what else we've learned in the passing time.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate the time and looking forward to more in the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
Well, everybody, that again wraps up another episode. I'm so thankful that Molly decided to come on the podcast and chat with us today about sleep. I think it's a very vital thing in our recovery and our health that is being severely overlooked right now. So I definitely suggest looking into your sleep. It can improve so many other facets of your life. I know that Molly and I did talk quite a bit about continuous glucose monitoring, which happened to be a total coincidence. We are both on board with the same platform, which is Levels Health. And like I mentioned in the podcast, you are able to skip the waiting line with that program right now. If you go to levels.link/fitfarmingfood, you can actually skip the 38,000 plus person waiting list and join their early access program. And it's $399, which may seem like a steep fee, but in my opinion, later on down the road, that your health is going to cost you so much more if you don't understand your biology. And I seriously think that the amount of feedback that you get back from it is you can't put a price on it. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. I know that I wore one for a month and it was incredible, and I definitely will be investing in wearing one more in the future, especially when I start cycling again this summer. So I'm super excited about that. And please, you guys, look into it. It's really important. And I will put that link in the show notes. Until next time, everybody.